This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yehia Suhib in Washington. Here's what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
It's really important that they have made this decision as they did. They did it swiftly. They did it right after the Africa CDC declared a regional emergency of public health concern. I think it really highlights the importance of what's going on in DRC right now.
That's UCLA epidemiologist Anne Rimouin, who says the World Health Organization made the right move by declaring Mpox a global emergency. Details coming up. Also, talks in Geneva are aimed at fostering a ceasefire in Sudan, but the country's military is not participating. And Chad and Cameroon are seeking international aid to prevent deaths from persistent flooding and severe drought. These stories and more on Africa News Tonight. We start with our top story. The World Health Organization has declared Mpox, a global emergency, for the second time in 3 years. The epidemic is concentrated in the Democratic Republic of Congo, which has reported 524 deaths and more than 14,000 cases, but the virus has also shown up at least a dozen other African countries. What does the emergency declaration mean? VOA's Carol Van Dam put that question to Dr. Anne Rimouin, an epidemiologist and director of the UCLA Center for Global and Immigrant Health, who just returned from Kinshasa, the DRC capital, on Saturday.
Absolutely. You know, I was on the committee last time, and, you know, I learned a lot about the process. I think that it's really important that they have made this decision as they did. They did it swiftly. They did it right after the Africa CDC declared a regional emergency of public health concern. I think it really highlights the importance of what's going on in DRC right now and really galvanizes support globally to be able to get in front of it.
What does the designation mean exactly? Like, what does it do?
The designation will unlock funds that can be used for emergency response. It will help gain access to vaccines and therapeutics that could be useful, and really just sends a message globally that this is a problem that requires international coordination.
And it also will enable countries to share vaccines with these poorer countries, right?
Exactly. I think that that's the key. You know, and when we had the outbreak and the global outbreak of 2022, high resource countries were able to utilize a lot of tools that are just not available in the global south, and notably vaccines, which made a very big difference in terms of reducing the impact of the outbreak and getting it under control reasonably quickly. Places like Central Africa need the support to be able to have adequate diagnostics, to have better surveillance, to have the ability to do public health campaigns to improve situational awareness, you know, research on Mpox and understanding the mechanism of spread and what's driving these increases has been hard to come by. This is a very important moment and mechanism that will drive support that will ultimately help contain this outbreak and with no time to lose.
We know that the variant Clade 1B is more contagious than Clade 1. Is it also deadlier?
Well, we don't actually have great data on this at this point. And that's part of what we need to know is we need to better understand, is this variant more contagious? Is it more severe? Do you see more severe disease? Does it cause more death? There are some indications that it does, but the data is scant, and it's important that we have adequate data to really answer the question and then also to understand if it is, why.
Are healthcare professionals like yourself worried that Mpox will not only spread to even more African countries, but places outside the continent, even maybe the U.S.?
Absolutely. As we've seen from COVID-19, Mpox, and many other outbreaks around the world, an infection anywhere is potentially an infection everywhere.
What about the vaccine? Why isn't it more available to African countries, especially right there in the Democratic Republic of Congo?
You know, first there were regulatory hoops to go through to be able to get this vaccine to a place where it was available in DRC. And then the DRC government needs to make the requests to be able to have the vaccine. But then there just isn't that much vaccine globally available. The Africa CDC estimates that there's a need for 10 million doses to be able to cover populations at risk. So it's going to require countries high resource settings to be able to donate some vaccine. And it's also going to require vaccine manufacturers to be able to ramp up production to be able to provide adequate numbers of vaccine.
That is Dr. Anne Rimouin, director of the University of California at Los Angeles Center for Global and Immigrant Health. She was speaking to VOA's Carol Van Dam from Los Angeles. The United States has opened talks in Geneva that are aimed at establishing a ceasefire in Sudan. The Sudan Armed Forces, or SAF, and the Paramilitary Rapid Support Forces, the RSF, have been fighting for more than a year for control of the country. In the U.S. State Department's daily briefing in Washington yesterday, Deputy Spokesman Vedant Patel described the aim of the talks, which included representatives from Switzerland, Saudi Arabia, Egypt, the United Arab Emirates, the African Union, and the United Nations.
We are there with a laser focus on ensuring that the SAF and RSF comply with their JEDA commitments. In the JEDA declaration, both the SAF and RSF committed to expanded discussions to achieve a permanent cessation of hostilities. We call on both sides to honor these commitments and to participate in Switzerland. What is happening in Sudan right now is one of the most dire humanitarian situations in the world. And so there is a moral responsibility for the United States and other like-minded partners to try and come together and see what else can be done to help alleviate that situation.
He also responded to questions about why the United Arab Emirates was invited to the talks, although the Sudanese armed forces consider the UAE government to be part of the conflict.
There are a number of relevant countries who have a vested interest in seeing a cessation of hostilities in Sudan, and so it's, we welcome any country that shares that like-minded goal to participate.
The SAF has not joined the talks, and Patel said the U.S. has reached out to the government forces, saying they have a responsibility to be there. The diplomats or international officials taking part in the talks have not responded to calls from VOA for comment about their progress. Today, however, White House National Security spokesman John Kirby told journalists the U.S. is very focused on getting both parties back to the negotiating table. Also today, Reuters News reported that Sudan's Sovereign Council said it would allow the use of the Adra border crossing with Chad for 3 months, a move long waited by aid agencies seeking to send aid into the areas of the Darfur region that are threatened with famine. The Sudanese armed forces had shut the Adre crossing months ago, alleging that it was used to smuggle weapons to the RSF. As the Geneva talks continue, Amnesty International says it has found that large quantities of recently manufactured or transferred weapons and ammunition from China, Russia, Serbia, Turkey, the United Arab Emirates, and Yemen are being shipped into Sudan, with some then diverted into Darfur. Members of the U.S. Congress started to address the UAE's role in Sudan, and the U.S. envoy to the United Nations appealed to the UAE to stop supporting the warring parties. Joseph Siegel, director of research at the Africa Center for Strategic Studies, explained to VOA senior analyst Mohamed El-Shenawi what the U.S. and the international community should do to deal with the problem.
There's a number of things that they can do. I think as part of these negotiations, we can hope to see some sort of authorized regional or UN monitoring mechanism that is using, satellite surveillance as well as on-the-ground monitors to verify that there aren't continued trafficking or the supply of weapons into Sudan that are fueling that conflict. And that if such supplies are identified, that there are tangible sanctions that will be applied to the suppliers of those weapons or funds. That said, the borders in Sudan are very porous. It's going to be difficult to stop all new supplies from reaching the combatants if the outside patrons don't come to some sort of political agreement. And so it is important that as part of the negotiations that it's impressed upon these external actors that it's in their financial and political interest for Sudan to resume being a stable and economically viable state. And so as part of this, it's important that these external actors realize there's a higher reputational cost than they've realized so far for sponsoring the conflict. And so I think that's where these hearings are important because it's put a spotlight on those actors that have been providing weapons and the respective actors. And several of these regional actors see themselves as growing regional powers. They want to be the hub for commerce, trade, travel, tourism in the region. And so they need to understand that their continued sponsoring of this conflict, and with it, the ethnic cleansing that is part and parcel of the conflict, this is putting their own regional reputation at risk. And that's going to have very significant political and economic costs for them.
So, how serious is the continuation of the conflict in Sudan to the regional security in Africa?
It's extremely important. Sudan has seven neighboring countries and the Red Sea. It borders Africa and the Middle East. It's one of the reasons why we're seeing this growing interest and involvement of a host of outside actors, including Russia, the UAE, Egypt, Saudi Arabia, Turkey. And, there's a real concern that this scramble for influence in Sudan will only accelerate until there is some sort of negotiated settlement and that all sides recognize that, having some sort of internationally brokered agreement is in the best interest rather than trying to fight it out on the ground or to outmaneuver their rivals at the expense of Sudan and Sudanese. So the strategic location of Sudan and the interest for influence by all of the regional actors is very much part and parcel of this conflict.
That was Joseph Siegel, Director of Research at the Africa Center for Strategic Studies, speaking with VOA Senior Analyst Mohamed El-Shenawy. You're listening to Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America. And for more information on these and other stories from the continent, please see voaafrica.com. There you'll find all your favorite VOA radio and TV programs and a whole lot more. For world news, check out voanews.com. Officials in Chad are asking for international assistance to save thousands of people from persistent flooding, while officials in neighboring Cameroon are seeking help to cope with the opposite problem, severe drought. Mokirwin Kinzeka reports from Yaoundé, Cameroon.
Chadian officials say floods for the past 3 days have forced about 53,000 people to flee several towns and villages in Sila, a southeastern province bordering Sudan and the Central African Republic. 42-year-old farmer Regine Bumbai said her house was swept away by floods on Tuesday. She says she is seeking refuge for herself and her three children at the Kuku Angarana Village Primary School because heavy rains triggered flooding that is destroying houses and plantations and also displacing animals. Mumbai told Chaden State TV Wednesday that flood victims are pleading for humanitarian assistance to save the lives of several hundred civilians, most of them children, facing hunger and malnutrition. This week, government officials, the United Nations and humanitarian agencies reported that 14 people had died and more than 245,000 civilians are affected by floods in 13 of Chad's 23 provinces. The UN Office for the Coordination of Humanitarian Affairs, or OCHA, said about 60,000 houses and schools have been destroyed or damaged. Chaden State TV has been broadcasting a message in which President Mahamat Idris Deby calls for solidarity with all flood victims.
Les catastrophes naturelles.
In the message, Deby says Chad is not the only victim of devastating floods and other shocks caused by severe changes in normal environmental patterns. He says there should be international solidarity in fighting climate shocks that also affect the world's most powerful nations. Chad says it is building temporary shelters in several dozen towns and villages, including the capital N'Djamena, and providing relief materials for affected families. The families include thousands of civilians fleeing internal armed conflicts and refugees fleeing Boko Haram terrorism and violence in conflict-ridden Sudan. As Chad steps up efforts to help flood victims, Cameroon is facing a different situation, as rains that were expected in July have yet to come in many regions of the country. This week, Muslims in Garoua, a northern town near Cameroon's border with Chad and Nigeria, held public prayers for rain. Ibrahim El Rashidini, traditional ruler and Muslim spiritual leader of Garoua, organized the prayers. Rashidini says he organized the prayers after farmers complained that the lack of rain since July is causing drought and making crops dry up in plantations. He says he is also calling Cameroonian government officials' attention to the looming famine as droughts are already forcing farmers from their land. Cameroon and Chad said last month the lives of more than 5 million people in the two countries were threatened by a severe humanitarian crisis triggered by the climate shocks and ongoing conflicts. Officials in both countries have called for international aid, though neither has given much detail on what they need. Moki Edwin Kinzuka, VOA News, Yaoundé, Cameroon.
Wisconsin is one of three states in the Midwest both Republicans and Democrats view as critical to their presidential campaigns. VOA's Midwest correspondent Ken Farbo looks at what's motivating voters as campaigning in the state ramps up.
When VOA met Wisconsin restaurant owner Gonzalo Perez in 2017, he expected a big boost in business.
It's my lottery ticket.
That's because Taiwanese company Foxconn planned to build a massive flat-screen manufacturing facility not far away. Employing as many as 13,000 workers, Perez thought might frequent his restaurant. But Perez's dreams and Foxconn's plans didn't meet reality. Today, Foxconn's scaled-back southern Wisconsin facility employs fewer than 1,000 people.
The promise never was done.
Instead of a busy restaurant filled with customers, Perez is dealing with empty tables, staff shortages, and rising costs due to inflation.
Economy is really bad for us.
I think that the real key when people go to vote in many cases is how do I deal with rising costs?
Bob Witke is a Republican representative in Wisconsin's State Assembly whose current district is near both Perez's restaurant and the Foxconn facility. While the economy is a top issue for voters, he hears even more frustration with what they see as a lack of bipartisan cooperation among lawmakers.
That we don't work together. I hear from both parties. You're not getting anything done.
Nick Ramos is the executive director of the Wisconsin Democracy Campaign, which he says is a bipartisan organization dedicated to good government in Wisconsin. The organization recently participated in a successful effort to change state legislative district maps in Wisconsin. Voters he talks to express concern about the future of U.S. democracy.
My hope is that no matter who ends up taking the Oval Office, it will be somebody that actually engages the people and actually wants to try and do everything to not only safeguard democracy, but find ways to make it better.
Wisconsin is a state as divided as any in the country, but what both Democrats and Republicans here can agree on is that succeeding in the presidential election in this state in November depends on how well they can get their voters to turn out.
So, Wisconsin, today I ask you, are you ready to get to work?
Recent polling in Wisconsin indicates Democratic nominee Vice President Kamala Harris has a narrow lead over Republican nominee, former President Donald Trump.
A vote for Trump is a vote to save Wisconsin and is a vote to save your country.
Restaurant owner Gonzalo Perez hasn't attended political events and hasn't met either candidate.
Lifestyle never change. It don't matter who gets it. I got to keep working 7 days a week, same schedule. I pay taxes regular. I don't see no benefit.
Perez says one thing above all will determine how he'll make his decision.
Sometimes I vote for whoever I think is going to be a change.
Kane Fairbaugh, VOA News, Madison, Wisconsin.
Hello, this is Heather Maxwell, host of Music Time in Africa. Join me every Saturday and Sunday for an hour of awesome African music. Wake up, dance this music. Like to stay on top of new music trends, breakout artists, new releases? Maybe you just love the classic styles and artists of the past. Or simply the sound and feel of a good beat. Whatever your pleasure, you can get it every week right here on Music Time in Africa. So join me on your local FM station, Saturdays and Sundays at 1500 and 2000 UTC.
South African prosecutors today withdrew charges against 95 Libyan nationals who were arrested last month at what police said was an illegal military training camp. Police alleged that the men who entered the country on study visas were receiving military training at the camp where firearms and ammunition were recovered. During their initial appearances in court, the accused said they were receiving security training at the camp. The National Prosecuting Authority said the men were only charged with violating the country's immigration laws, and their lawyer told reporters that they expected them to be deported back to Libya in the next 48 hours. The men have now been handed over to immigration officials.
VOA. VOA Africa has a wide variety of programs for you. News, lifestyle, health, politics, youth, women, sports. We have it all. Tune into our discussion shows on the radio, television, and the internet on voaafrica.com.
And with that, we wrap up this edition of Africa News Tonight. I'm Yehias Wuhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. On behalf of our producer, David Van Dee, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.